Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Welcome to the one and only Dog Pod. Week one is in the books. BT, Mitch, and Law Dog here, ready to break down those Huskies' 47-14 win over the Eastern Washington Eagles. We're going to preview Saturday's game against Cal, do a real quick check down of the Pac-12 action. Mitch and Law Dog, opening of college football, opening of the 2019 tailgating season. You guys have fun?
Oh, yeah, baby.
It was a gem.
It was a gem. Nice and hot. Last Saturday, 12 noon at Husky Stadium, we welcomed the Eagles of Eastern Washington University to Husky Stadium. Law Dog, give us the cliff notes.
Well, we're going to get into special teams, but, I mean, guys, this game started with a touchback.
Wow.
How excited. Whoa,
what? Timmy Horn.
All right, so Eastern gets the ball at their own 25, and with the help of a false start, they end up going 3-and-out. UW takes over. Not very much distance to go at the 45, and Ahmed was getting most of the work early. He took the ball 4 times. Eason checked it down a couple times. And then they worked their way down to the 23-yard line. And on 4th and 2, Richard Newton in the Wildcat gets his first carry as a Husky and goes up the gut for a 23-yard touchdown, 7-0 Washington. Then the Eagles get their next drive extended a little bit with a holding penalty on Kyler Gordon. They appear to go 3-and-out again. But then on 4th and 2 from midfield, Eagles decide to go for it. Josiah Back Bronson call. Gets that huge sack on quarterback Eric Barriere. Turnover. Next play, it's almost like Peterson is just saying, oh, you're going to go for it? This is what I can do. Yep. Jacob Eason steps back, a little 5-step drop, and hits Bocelli in stride up the sideline for a 50-yard touchdown. Reminded me of John Ross, guys. It just looked beautiful. 14-0 Washington, and the route was like on. I felt like that was the turning point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Eastern goes 3-and-out. Eason's got the hot hand, so they go back to him again. Starts to get warmed up, including a nice couple nice completions to Hunter Bryant. He's going to Fuller and McGrew. He's spreading it around. Then on 3rd and goal from the 7-yard line, he throws up that high fade route in the corner of the end zone to Fuller, makes a SportsCenter catch for a touchdown, and it's now 21-zip. So then another touchback. I mean, at this point, we're getting spoiled, right?
Finally.
Eagles get going just a little bit here. They break a 26-yarder on the first play from scrimmage by Dennis Merritt. And then they work their way down to the UW 30-yard line. But on 3rd and 3, Benning Potawai with that huge 15-yard sack. Quarterback was trying to scramble out of it and knocking Eastern out of field goal range. Eagles defense gets their first stop here at the beginning of the second quarter, and they're driving back down. They actually took 18 plays down the field to the UW 18-yard line, but then Andre Slider misses the 35-yard field goal, and the Dogs take back over on downs.
Laces out.
True freshman kicker.
Okay, so then it takes them it took them 18 plays to work their way down the field, but then UW 8 plays later, they go all the way down for another touchdown. This time it was McClatcher. But Richard Newton, they just kind of rotating backs here. He ended up getting 28 more yards here on 4 carries. So he's already 5 carries, 50 yards early in the first half here. He was looking pretty good. So it's 28-0 Washington at this point after McClatcher's touchdown. I'd say probably the worst moment of the day here for the Washington defense. This is the end of the first half. Eagles started to kind of spread it out, air it out. They look for Andrew Boston for a 20-yard gain, and then they go right back to him for a 64-yard touchdown. Big breakdown.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, big breakdown on the defensive side of the ball. So then that takes us into the half. Once we get to the second half, this was all Ahmed, so he kind of starts the game, starts the second half, but not as productive maybe as Newton. But then Eason finds Fuller again for a 2nd touchdown, 18 yards this time, and it's 35-7 Huskies. Eastern punts it back. Then Eason really starts to make this connection with Hunter Bryant, right? He makes that really nice slant over the middle, 27 yards. And then with the Huskies up 4 touchdowns and facing 4th and 6, I want to talk about this for a sec. They get down to the Eagles' 27-yard line. They're up 4 touchdowns. Why, at this moment in time, are we electing to go for it on 4th and 6 rather than just seeing if Peyton Henry can kick a 45-yarder when there's no pressure? People aren't even back in their seats after halftime here. You know, after the game, Peterson's kind of saying all the right things. Oh, yeah, he could have made it. We just, you know, that's not our game plan, and that's on the chart doesn't say it, or, you know, whatever that was. It's like, no, 4th and 6 from the 27-yard line, every football team in America kicks a field goal in that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so I just, to me, this is something they are speaking very loudly here with their actions. They are not going to put him on the field for anything longer than about 40 yards. And to me, that was kind of just something to raise my eyebrow there. Then we get into the third quarter here. Washington puts their final touchdown of the game. This is a little one-yarder from Achmed. It goes up 42-14 at this point. After Eastern comes back against the second-string defense, basically, they just basically ran it down their throat. So that was one of the warning signs that I saw in the second half after they got it to 42-14. But then the other one, coming in the next drive, when third and one there, when Kamari Pleasant gets stopped behind the line of scrimmage, the Huskies had to settle for a 22-yard field goal there, so it's 45-14. On the next drive, the Huskies kind of get their revenge. They pin Eastern down on that one-yard line on that Race Porter bouncing kick. And then, I mean, guys, is this the next Husky great linebacker?
Oh, Laiatu
Latu?
Yeah, it sure seems
drilling
like
the Eagles running back in the end zone for a safety to put a bow on this. And the Huskies,
like, three freshmen all piling on him at once at the after.
Yeah. True freshmen.
All true freshmen.
Yeah. Beautiful. So 47-14 the final. I mean, this, they look great out there. It was great to see.
Beautiful day. You know, and I think it's easy for the national media to say, it was Eastern Washington. But again, this team is what, ranked number three in the FCS?
Mm-hmm.
Played in the national championship last year for the FCS level. So
Some of our opposition, the Pac-12, was playing this
year. Absolutely
weekend.
Agree with that.
I agree.
Professor Mitch, what do you say? How do you grade out that offense?
Well, you know, we were talking about this a little bit earlier. When was the last time a Husky team started off with a 21-point opening quarter? Right?
Yeah.
It's been a while, especially in a season opener, right? Yeah. So that was pretty darn exciting to see that in firsthand.
Oh, it's great.
You know, we got to start with Skinny. And by the way, the Jacob Eason Skinny nickname is perfect.
Oh, it's great.
I love it so much. I saw two Skinny jerseys,
did you?
By the way, in the stadium. It's fantastic. I love it.
He looks like a small forward.
it's amazing.
I hope the guys wearing those were large.
Yeah, they were. They were too. So, you know, he finished the day 27 of 36 for 349 yards, 4 TDs, no INTs. But here, that line does not do justice on what happened in that game, okay? There were several times where you could hear audible gasps
so far
from the crowd. Yeah.
The crowd on his arm strength. The most key play was, you know, the example of that was, I think it was either the first quarter or the second quarter. There was a little bit of a fumbled snap, and he just stood back there and bombed a 65-yard pass that was, wait, like 10 yards past the receiver, right, and the DB. But the fact that he just flicked it.
Launched it, yeah.
Right, and everybody just went, was fantastic.
There was like, I felt like there was laughter, like when a 7'5" guy dunks. That it's just like, it's so impressive, it's almost funny that people like, what happened there?
So, you know, that era has begun, right? So that's fantastic to see that. You know, I thought it was everything folks cracked him up to be. Coach Pete did a great job of trying to settle expectations and bring them back down. But, man, you can see why people are so excited, right?
Absolutely.
So that's pretty darn awesome. The surprise for me for the day, of course, like everybody's been talking about, is Richard Newton, right? 12 carries, only 3 behind Achmed. Because he got going was the thing. 91 yards, a TD. Boy, we just mentioned it in the recap. The confidence to go with the freshman, the redshirt freshman, right, on that fourth down in the first quarter. I couldn't believe my eyes. That was a very pivotal moment in the game.
Wild Newt.
Yeah, the Wild Newt. Yeah, and he looked good. You know, I mean, this could be a really interesting thing. I think the thing that is really interesting to me is this could be the person that spells Achmed. Hey, if I'm Sean McGrew and Kamari Pleasant,
I'd be a little nervous.
That being said, it's going to be a really long season. I think it's a fantastic thing to have him step up the way that he did. And then if we've got a deep running back rotation, that's not a bad thing either, guys. So
I mean, Kamari Pleasant, 5 carries, 7 yards.
Right.
McGrew, 4 carries, 24 yards. Not bad. To your point, I think I would be very nervous if I was those guys. I've been saying for years they're going to split the carries and start dividing them up a little more, but they never do. Maybe this is the year they actually do it.
Yeah, and a lot of that had to do with, old Miles back there was so good, right? So now we'll see maybe a little more of that. Again, first game, long season, so more to come there. But it's a good problem to have, right? Red zone, let's talk about that a little bit. Big issues last year.
Oh, yeah.
Not this year. They're looking like 5 of 6, guys. 5 of 6. And I heard on the radio, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, the one that they didn't convert was towards the end of the game with Jacob Sermon taking a knee. But, you know, I think they may have had that other play with Kamari Pleasant being tackled in the backfield. So I'm not sure on that.
That was in the 22, I think. Or no, that
were they
right.
just outside? The okay, but they were way more efficient. They just looked like...
And targeting Aaron Fuller. I think they're clearly going up high to him and saying, hey, go up and get it. So maybe he's the guy with the hops on the team. But, I mean, yeah, they've got something figured out that they didn't have figured out last year, it looks like.
And I'll just say this. I think the receivers just look better for whatever reason. And I don't know if that's a function of having a quarterback that actually can get the ball into tight windows that then brings their confidence up that they don't have to be perfect on everything. Like, look, you're going to get the ball where, you know, you can make a play. So just focus on that versus having to wait for that ball to show up. And then knowing your defender is going to either light you up or be all over you. It seems like that whole receiving corps game was just elevated in some fashion. And maybe it's a combination of the work that that they put in the offseason, as well as having a quarterback with that kind of arm strength. So fantastic to see all up. I give it an A. Pretty darn exciting opener.
You're right. Not only the speed that he can get there and the distance, but he doesn't have, I hate to compare Browning because again, I'm always going to be the Browning apologist, but he doesn't have the windup that Browning does. Browning is the bow and arrow. Have to cock it back, and when the defense sees him cock it back, they go, okay, make a break, he's going that way.
Yep.
Where Eason is the loaded crossbow, where he doesn't have to have that full body hinge and cock back of his arm where the defense can kind of make the break on it.
And across the field. Yeah, no, I mean, the arm strength changes everything, because now you have to cover, you know, way more field than you did with
and more quickly. Yeah,
yeah, and he's got a margin for error. And I know people are going. I mean, let's face it, we are going to compare these two guys because they're the quarterback. That's just how it works. These guys are going to get compared to Marcus Tuiasosopo and Brock Huard and all these other Husky quarterbacks. So, but the arm strength does a lot for you, and we saw it. Well, we saw exactly why.
Yeah, I think a great performance. I agree with you, Mitch. Should we get into the defense, guys?
Let's do it.
All right, let's talk D, death row. So, look, they held Eastern to 275 yards, including just 63 yards rushing on 30 carries. They can train that dual-threat quarterback, Eric, and I got to correct you here, Barriere.
Thank you.
Just want to double-check. Those guys, man, the dual-threat quarterbacks have given us fits.
Yeah.
For years, right? And it's nice to be able to contain someone like that. You'd have forced 6 punts allowed Eastern into the red zone just 3 times on 12 possessions, 20 recorded tackles. Everybody got playing time, man. 20 Huskies recorded tackles, 20 different Huskies. Great to see 9 true freshmen. Asa Turner, Trent McDuffie, Latu Latu, everybody, all these freshmen getting in there and getting playing time. The secondary, man, how about that true freshman, Latu Latu, safety at the end of the game? We talked about that. Great, man. Miles Bryant, 8 tackles. He's your leader. Like, that is your defensive leader, no question. Linebackers, Kyler Manu had 7 tackles. In terms of quarterback pressure, a big weakness last year. How about 4 sacks, man? A pair from Benning Patois, one apiece for Josiah Bronson and Ryan Bowman. But should we begin the picking of the nits?
Okay.
Let's do it. Sure. Okay. Kyler Gordon, 2 holding penalties. 1 questionable, 1 for sure. Like, was about to get beat and grabbed. Like, and got to clean that up. Clean up the tackling, man. That 64-yard touchdown run, Keith Taylor and Cam Williams had hands on that and missed the tackle. You got to clean that up. Ariel Nagata looked very strong. He had a real silly personal foul. No turnovers, man. Don Hampton had that one.
Yeah.
Sure pick 6. And has had that classic move where I'm going the whole way and forgot to catch the ball before his feet left in their other direction. One more note I got to say about this. It's kind of a bummer, man. We were missing Herne Benavalu. We're going to miss him for the first 4 games due to suspension.
Right.
I don't like to see that. But again, same thing, Mitch. You know, I'm nitpicking here, but real pleased with all those question marks. I get it. It's Eastern, but I feel good moving forward.
Yeah, I think they showed some potential to on Saturday, but I also just think this is not a death row defense that's in midseason form right now, and I think you have to give them some time to gel. A guy like Latu Latu, he didn't go out on the first play of the game and start this game. Maybe he should be starting next week. He'll play his way onto the field. Guys that we talked about having confidence in, like Brandon Wellington, didn't hear his name a lot. So there's opportunity linebacker. We knew that. So, some of those guys may be able to play their way onto the field. Secondary, I'm not worried about. Kyler Gordon, maybe he's a little grabby and more penalties are on the way. He's got somebody next man up behind him. I mean, we'll have somebody
That's right.
in that position.
If that becomes an issue.
Right, if that becomes an issue. So, you know, to your point, 9 true freshmen seeing the field. I mean, we need the dudes. That's what we needed, those guys to get out there and prove that they could hang with this team. So that's encouraging.
The other thing I was really excited about, too, was just seeing the rotations, too. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but it was like a hockey line.
Shift.
Yeah, hockey. You know,
jumping
like,
over the wall.
And I think that speaks to they may not be as elite on the high end, right? They may not have a Greg Gaines this year, but the depth behind that, I think, has risen up to the point where hopefully they can sub a little bit more and be fresher later in the game. And let's be real, guys, if the offense can be take the step forward that we all expect them to, they don't need to be the death row defense, right? They can still be a really, really good defense, but have a vastly improved offense, and the team's going
to
be just fine.
Not us to do so much because they're not on the field all of them. Yeah.
Well, and the nice thing about replacing so many starters and having so many open spots and rotating so heavily is you see which guys play up to the challenge and which ones don't. I bet by the end of the season that rotation might be smaller, and that's probably going to be a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Law Dog, should we talk about it? The bane of our existence last year, special teams. How'd they fare?
You know, I thought this was all right. Let's start with the good. Kickoffs from Tim Horn. We mentioned it already. I mean, I'm excited about it. Strong, most of them into the end zone. Eastern was going to kind of try to take their shots. They started running them out a little bit. But, you know, I would expect some touchbacks this season. I thought that was a great development.
He did have the one shank.
Yeah, he did shank one. And, you know.
I'll take the one shank over, you know, consistently kickoffs 35. To the 5 yard.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that looked good. And the coverage was fine. You know, again, level of competition, who knows what to make of it. But certainly Eastern didn't get anything started past like the 20 or so, except for the shank. On the punting side, Whitford looked good, right? Didn't he have a couple punts for I think he averaged 50 yards on his kicks? And then Porter had that nice rolling one that led to the safety at the end, which we were kind of talking about. So, yeah, I was really encouraged on the punting side. The place kicking, I still come back to, you know, we really need to figure out what Peyton Henry's limitations are. I just don't. There's no pressure to make that kick. They don't even try it. He made the 22-yarder. Great. Anyone on the roster for any college football team should make a 22-yarder. I want to know if he can make a 45-yarder because that's a much more important thing that we need to know going into the season. I mean, we might need a key field goal this week. We sure needed one last year against the Cal Bears. So that is something that I'm very concerned about. And frankly, seeing the practices that I saw, I didn't see anything that makes me change the trajectory. I thought Tim Horn looked better than what I saw in practice. But Peyton Henry's a kicker, so we got to see him.
Yeah, and look, maybe they would have rolled out Timmy Horn if they had to hit that 45 or 50. Like we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. And that maybe that's I think that might be Peterson's MO here is he's trying to keep his cards turned over. He doesn't want to show other teams.
There is definitely some gamemanship. Yeah, yeah. These aren't the droids are looking for going on right here.
So true. And so Whitford, loved to see him, the senior. Shout out to good buddy of mine, John. His parents are coming in from Australia to their first American football game this Saturday. Going to see their fellow countrymen living the American dream.
Dude, that's awesome.
The Aussie punter, Joel Whitford. As I said, another Australian taking away a job from a hardworking American right there, this punter.
We don't pay him anything.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's not a quote-unquote job.
2 punts, 100 for 100 yards, guys. Long of 52. That's not bad.
Looks solid. Yeah. It's what you want, man. Just what you want. And a senior feels good about it. All right, guys, so we move on, man. So one of the books, everybody felt good, I think, about it. And think of the last 2 times we've played Eastern. Boy, this one felt different. So this time, it's the now number 14 ranked Washington Huskies against the Golden Bears of California, 7:30 in Husky Stadium. The rare Week 2 conference opener broadcast live on Fox Sports 1.
Any truck racing, BT?
There better not be, because if there is, we won't be starting on time. Get your butt in the stadium. This is the 99th meeting of these two programs. UW with a 55-40-4 advantage and one of the longest winning streaks ever. I got to mention this. 19 straight, 1977 to 2001. Yeah. The Dogs have won, think about this, 66-27 in 2016, 38-7 in 2017. And then last year, the unexplainable, the bane of our year last year, the 10-12 loss of that horrible interception by the former Husky, we might get into it later, Jacob Hayner. We want revenge. This time the Dogs are favored by 14. The over-under is 43. Vegas wants this thing 29-15. Don't care what you talk about. I want that win. So look, guys, Cal last week, they got the win, but it didn't look pretty, man. 27-13 win over UC Davis. They fumbled the opening kickoff. Chase Garbage gets picked off. Cal can't slow Davis down. All of a sudden, they're up. They're up by 10. And think about this: 4 turnovers on the day. The Bears rally. Their heir to Patrick Laird, Chris Bowen, man, he got a ton of work. 36 carries, 197 yards. And Garber, loving receiver Keiko Crawford. 3 receptions, 2 were TDs. It wasn't pretty. They admitted as much, but they did get the win, man. So they're coming to town. Law Dog, talk to me about that Cal defense and what you want to see out of our offense in this
matchup. I didn't hear Evan Weaver talk about how it wasn't pretty after the game. It's funny that I must have missed that.
We're going to hear his chants this Saturday.
We're going to talk about that in a second. All right. So we talked about this on our Pac-12 North preview show, a little division of opinion on how, you know, tough this game is going to be, Cal's and what a challenge Cal's defense presents, right? Our friends over at Wildcat Radio have their beta rank by Rob Bowron. He's at beta rank FB on Twitter. Last season, he had Cal's defense on his beta rankings 17th in the country, second only to Washington in the Pac-12, who had ranked 5th. Even higher than Utah, right? So this is a great defense. Most of these guys are back this year, too. And I think we can all agree, prior to Coach Peterson's arrival at UW, Huskies had, I'm going to let you guys fill in the blank. How many good defensive coordinators do we have in those 15 or so seasons before Coach B got here?
Whew, not many.
I'd say Justin Wilcox is probably the only one.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And that's the guy who's heading up the Cal Bears defense. So, you know, this is a guy who knows our program well, who knows what we're going to do, and he coaches his guys up. So we saw what they could do last season. Cal broke the upset, 12-10 in Berkeley, as BT just mentioned. And aside from one scoring drive at the beginning of that game, I mean, there was nothing after that, right? Mm-hmm. So they are led by number 89. Look for him out there, senior inside linebacker Evan Weaver. This is a kid from Gonzaga Prep High School in Spokane, right? He probably grew up on the east side of the mountains. He's a Husky hater. He didn't get offered by the hometown team. He's got a lot of, a lot of
salt
going on. But this guy, he was on the preseason All Pac-12, a couple preseason All American forecasts. So this is a great, great inside linebacker. And after last season, after the win, He was quoted saying Cal had a better culture than UW and talking about why they had just kicked our ass, by 2 at home, whatever.
Amazing.
And then last week, after this meager win over UC Davis that we just talked about, he said, we're going to fly up there and beat them Saturday. That's what we do. That's an exact quote. So this is a pretty tall talk for a guy who plays for a team that went 7-6 last year and 5-7 the year before. And last time they were in Husky Stadium, lost 38-7. But he's got a lot to say.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, I'm just getting mad talking about it. All right. Aside from Weaver, though, Bears are loaded in the secondary. Ashton Davis, this is another senior All-American at preseason at safety. They've got 2 corners of Cameron Bynum and Elijah Hicks, both juniors, really experienced lockdown guys. So, this isn't just a challenge for us, like, in the grand scheme of things. This is one of the biggest, best defenses, best secondaries that we're going to play this season, and we're having them in week 2. So this is kind of what's made me nervous. Now, I see Jacob Eason going out there and lighting it up in week 1, and I've definitely, taken a log off and kind of cooled off a little bit. But this is a game we need to be on the lookout for. This is not the Cal Bears that we are used to kicking around Husky Stadium. So I know Peterson's going to say he's not paying attention to bulletin board material and not all, all the Evan Weaver quotes. Trust me, those will be taped to the lockers, and those guys aren't going to remember what he said. And last season, let's just face it. It was an embarrassment for the offense of the Washington Huskies. It just was. And so this is a big test for Jacob Eason to show how he can impact the offense and impact how a defense is going to cover us. So I think if we come out and score 4 touchdowns or so, I think that's going to be a great sign in my mind. So, I think on the defensive side of the ball, it's a big test, but we can do it.
Yeah, I'd agree. Big one for this team. Going from an Eastern Washington to a Cal who gave us fits last year, and I would agree with the beta rank. I think they're going to be a real solid defense this year. Great test for the team. Mitch, what do you say about that Cal offense going against our Husky D? What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I'm excited to see this because I think it's shaping up as a different type of challenge now for this Husky team, right? So we saw him against a mobile quarterback, and we'll get to that in a second. But if you look at what Chris Brown did as a power running back, he almost had I think he had 197 yards last week.
So many touches.
Dude, they were a lot of yak there. A lot of guys bouncing off him. So I really want to see how this defense responds. Are they gang tackling? Are they all, kind of coming together from that first unit on the defensive line, kind of slowing them down, and then hopefully linebackers cleaning them up and DBs, hopefully knocking that ball loose or something like that, right?
We've been great at tackling the last few years, but last week was not one of them.
Yeah, yeah. I you know, and I think that that was a good, you know, warm up for them to understand they got to raise their game there, right? Like I mentioned before, Garbers is mobile, all right? He gets around a little bit. He scrambles, stuff like that. We'll see what happens. You know, I think he's probably a step down from the guy that they just played last weekend, Eastern Washington's quarterback. Really athletic.
Yeah.
Really athletic, right? But it will be interesting to see how they game plan for that and if they can carry that forward, right? The other thing I'm interested in is their offense going to try and pick on Kyler Gordon a bit after what we saw this first week?
I wouldn't be
surprised they if might, we yeah. see that, right? And so this will be a great test for that young cornerback to respond. You know, I thought overall, if you look at his grade on the game, I thought he did really darn well. He had several tackles, you know, kind of really bounced back. I think he's going to be fine, like we were talking about. Boy, that would be interesting if they go right at him and to see how he responds, right?
Well, where else are they going to go? I mean, yeah, they're totally. Not going at Molden.
Right, so, right, not, totally, yeah. Which is a great problem to have, right? So, and then can that young UWD edge, those edge rushers continue their progression, right? Benning Potai, as you guys saw, maybe just kind of came out later today, conference Pac-12 Defensive Lineman of the Week award. That's pretty awesome considering, you know, his journey as a player. Can he get back-to-back? Can he continue to disrupt in the backfield? And do we see more guys flash, right? Joe Tryon, right? Ariel Nagata, some of those other guys, can they start flashing, right? And do we see that rotation of the D linemen continue to maybe gel a little bit and see what happens there? You know, we didn't really mention Levi too much, but at the same time, he had a pretty big game, like taking on multiple defenders and kind of opening it up for other guys, right? So let's see how
Benning.
That... Yeah, exactly. Right, right. Look, I'm not buying any major threat from these guys, all right? I think the Huskies cover. And
you're laying the 14?
I'm laying the 14. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I would agree with you, Mitch. And look, I'm not concerned about this. I do. It's a test for our offense. If the D is going to, you know, you want to hold them to 17 points or fewer, because I think our guys can put up a lot more than that on these. But I think last year snuck up on us in a time that our boys just weren't ready for the game from an emotional perspective and probably didn't have their head screwed on straight for it. And I don't think we're going to look over these guys this year. And, you know, I think they looked more ready last week as well. Should we talk special teams? Real quick, man, special teams versus Cal. Let's build upon that improvement over last year. Love to see Chico McClatcher punt returns.
Yeah.
Mostly fair catching, fine, but let's see him break one. Sean McGrew got to bring a couple back, 22-27. Love to see him break one out. No shanks off that kickoff, Timmy Horn. Boot it into the end zone every time. Don't want to see any returns from Ashton Davis. The one thing with Ashton Davis, he had that horrible drop that led to 7 points against Davis. But if a guy has the dropsies all year, you start to think, oh, great. But a guy like Ashton Davis, I think that actually is like he's going to, oh, wow. Like, I need to secure the ball. He's probably not going to make that mistake again. Moore was asked of Cal on special teams. Greg Thomas hit 3 field goals, man, 1 for 47. So let's keep them on their half of the field. I don't want it to come down to that. I'm with Mitch. Look, I don't like betting on the Huskies. It's not something I want to do. But if I had to, I'd put money on them to cover. I see a 17-18-point win against these guys. Might not be a beatdown as of years past. But this look... I'm not concerned about it. I'm more worried about other games. We're going to fuck these guys up.
All right. Well, last year, it's worth mentioning, we were playing the game without Miles Gaskin. So
yes.
that is definitely not nothing. And the Husky offense just couldn't do anything. And frankly, you know, it's the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about anymore. But Jake Haener came into the game and threw a pick six in a game that we were leading at the time, 7-6? So, you know, I think...
Totally.
I think... If you're Coach Peterson, I hope you took away from that game last year, win the damn game 7-6. Yeah. It doesn't matter if I need to run out 2 or 3 minutes of the clock and punt it back to these guys. They can't do anything against our offense or against our defense. And that was the posture that the game was in last season.
Keep in mind, Haener came in not because of an injury, but because Browning was playing so bad that he got ripped off the field.
Exactly. Sure. No, and so I do think there's – I think – You know, maybe you guys are talking me down off the ledge a little bit. I shouldn't be as worried about this Cal team as I am, but I certainly think Eason is in a better position to exploit this Cal defense. I think the question is our defense going to be as just locked down as it was in that game last year? Because let's face it, Cal did nothing against us last season. I mean, Garbers had 153 yards. They combined for rushing. It looks like 91 yards on 36 carries. They did nothing.
And they looked bad in the first half. of their opener too.
Against Davis.
Against Davis. So look, like I don't think these guys are going to score more than 10 points. Honestly, I honestly will be shocked.
And this is going to be a fan base that's out for blood. They're walking into the Coliseum at this point. I mean, more. Give me more against Evan Weaver.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't lay the 14, but I definitely like the Dogs to win. You guys have talked me into it.
We're switching phases where every year at the Apple Cup, I'm the guy going, I don't know, I'm really worried about the Cougs this year.
Yeah, totally.
Every
year, totally. Hey, we got to play different roles, all right? All right, so you brought it up. You guys were mentioning Hayner. Maybe we should touch on that
real quick.
Briefly.
What do you think?
Really darn quick.
The culture of college football transfers is really what we're talking about here, right? Because I mean, you look around and there's quarterbacks all over the country that say, hey, I committed to a place and I want to be the starter and I want to play. Well, you know what? Not everybody gets a trophy, right? And and I think that that is one of those things where you look at Jake Hayner. He got an offer from one Power 5 school. That was Washington. And granted, he's a good Husky. He's a loyal kid. He's done nothing but say and do the right things. But I don't mind having a quarterback room that's full of talented players that doesn't include him at this point. And I think people just forget about that Cal game last year. That was the one opportunity he really had to shake things up and basically blew the game. And now I'm not saying go out and harass him on social media like some people did. That's awful. He's just a kid. But let's not pretend like he was the second coming of, you know, of the Messiah when, you know, he lost his job to Jacob Eason. And I think we saw why on Saturday. So I am, you know, you don't like to see guys transfer out of your program. But now the question is, okay, you want to go start for Fresno State or something. Okay, great. Jacob Eason gets hurt, and now we've got a freshman at quarterback. Look at what just happened to USC.
Yep.
Jack Sears says, oh, I'm not going to be the starter. I'm going to go somewhere else like Central Florida or whatever. And now
could have played the whole season.
He could have played the whole season, and he could have been going into next season as the starter. So these are kind of things. These kids, I think, you know, I think it's important for them to take a little bit longer view. I do see some criticism of them that I think is unfair. You certainly don't want to criticize somebody for, hey, let him enjoy his own college experience the way he wants to. But you make a commitment to a team, and it's not the worst thing in the world to be a backup quarterback. It's actually a hell of a nice job. And it's a good way to be on a team. So, you know, I get that they want to play. It's a tough one. It's a tough one for me. I look around in this quarterback room and I see, you know, I think we had a pretty obvious candidate in Jacob Eason to be the starter. And now I look and see, you know, a pretty empty room behind him. And I don't think that's a good situation for college football programs, not Washington, but all programs to have to be in every season.
I don't know. I'm so torn on this one because a part of me thinks like this is kind of the new normal and it's just a reality. I go back and forth on the whole thing. Well, hey, if a coach can leave, why can't a kid leave? Right. Because a bunch of these coaches will jump ship and go to a new job.
I totally get that. Yeah.
And so there's that part of the argument too, that if you flip that around, I think for Hayner specifically, I get it. I think that if you look at the position that he was in and the other guys around him, if not now, then when was he going to get the opportunity, right? And when the timing was made sense to me from a perspective of if he waited a longer into the season and things didn't pan out his way with the amount of eligibility that he had left, if he tried to go to another program and lost the year, he could have been only down to 1 year left because there would have needed to be another starter for part of that season on when he could regain some eligibility to play with the amount of time he had left. So, you know, it gets sticky. Obviously, I don't like seeing kids leave. I like them, you know, to have a kind of holistic view of when I commit to a program, I commit for the education to the university.
Built for life.
Right. You know, the whole deal. Right. But I get why it happens too. Right. I get the human side of it as well.
I totally do too. I'm not trying to kick the kid while he's down, but just to say, look, anything can happen. He was going to get on the field. Peterson said, hey, you're going to play. I mean, it stands to reason, hey, maybe Eason does get hurt. Maybe he leaves for the NFL after this year. By the way, when he graduates, Jake Hayner will be a redshirt senior in his fifth year in the program. There's nothing stopping him from being the starter at that point.
No,
so I think there's a lot of reasons that should have kept him or that could have kept him home. Again, you don't want to get into it and say, every I know what's best for every other kid out there, but I want to make the point. I think we've gone a little too far when we say, hey, players should have total free agency, because maybe some rule changes are needed, right? Hey, maybe if the coach gets fired, you should be able to say, here you go.
Absolutely.
Here you go.
You should be able to open everything
up. You should be able
up.
To open it up. That's a little different. But I think in the situation we're in, and now, you know, we've got two quarterbacks that have transferred, Colson Yankoff, one who's trying to get eligible at UCLA, and Coach Peterson saying no. The other one is Jake Haner, where he's saying, oh, well, I like you. You're a little sparky ankle biter, so I'm going to let you get eligibility immediately. That puts the coach, now the program's in a difficult position. How do we say Colson Yankoff can't go beat us with UCLA next season, you know, or in a future game, but Jake Haner, he's my favorite, so he can go out in Fresno State and play
right
away.
It's messy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'll say, look, if looking at it from an outside perspective, you think, look, maybe he would have been better to stay. I don't blame him. Go do what you want to do if you think that's the right thing to do. I think that transfer like this is with, you know, 5 days before the season is very different from a grad transfer, where I got my degree from UW. Mm-hmm. I just never got to see the field, really.
Yeah.
And now I kind of want to go see. I already have my degree from UW. I want to actually go play ball for a little bit and see what happens before I end this thing. I think that's very different. I think if you're harassing him on Twitter, you're a jerk. You're not a good Husky fan.
Go away.
Because he quit the team, he didn't quit me as a person or you. Yeah. Like, some people just, why are you taking this so personally? Let the kid go. Also, I hate to say this, but I'm not going to lose any sleep. And personally, I'd rather have Sermon get the touches. So I don't really care.
No, I think that's actually a great point. Jacob Sermon, I think, is a guy who probably has a higher ceiling. We should have invested more time in him in the spring. But that goes back to my point and my problem here is that, you know, we gave Haner 50% of the touches or whatever this spring to see if he was the guy. Okay, we found out you're not the guy, and now you bail on the program, and we wasted that on you when we could have been just developing Jacob Sermon.
It's a lost investment.
Yeah,
right there.
It's a lost investment.
Okay, I think we've beaten that dead horse.
Yeah, we have, and good luck at Fresno State. So look, guys, should we get down to the Pac-12 checkdown and talk about the rest of the league?
Sure.
All right, and guys, everybody else, we will be at that Cal game in force, and we're going to be loud, and I can't wait for those fourth quarter Evan Weaver chance to come when we're up by 20-plus, according to Mitch and I. All right, so the Pac-12, it started off with a dud, man. Zona put up 38 points, created 6 turnovers. Tate throws for 361 yards and runs for 108, and you still find a way to lose. 45-38. I mean, I cannot believe that from a box score perspective. Tate rushing on the last play of the game about 40 yards, stopped on the one, like that old Titans-Rams Super Bowl.
Totally,
the thing
was
crazy. Flags abound in this. 10 for 99. They led the nation in penalty yardage last year and didn't clean anything up, man. The secondary scored making a Rainbow Warriors receiver. Secondary, man, think of this. They make the Rainbow Warriors receiver, Cedric Bird. He pulls down 4 touchdowns, buddy. 4 touchdowns against you. This week, Zona needs to bounce back at home against the Northern Arizona, 7:45 p.m. on Pac-12 Network. Mitch, how say you, buddy? How nervous should Bear Down Nation be?
Well, it's Northern Arizona, so I don't think they should be too nervous. But
yeah, no.
Dude, what happened to my darling pick of the South, guys?
Not so darling.
South preview. Only one thing I can you know, blame it on. I must have had beer goggles.
Too many Bud Light Platinums.
Bud Light Platinums, we're talking to them.
They were flowing, right?
They were flowing.
Here's the thing that's kind of, I'm scratching my head here. You know, Kevin Sumlin's supposed to be this, you know, offensive, you know, minded coach.
Yeah.
Gosh, and it just, is he mismanaging Khalil Tate? Like, to your point, Khalil Tate did fine. In, you know, from a stat-wise perspective, you know, he was definitely rolling. And, you know, the defense is kind of basically what let them down in this first game. But, man, you got to be scratching your head. I'm kind of shocked here where, you know, it feels like Herm has got ASU kind of just, you know, progressing along. Mm-hmm. And Sumlin and Arizona is just, they're just struggling. They haven't figured it out.
What's going to happen when Tate leaves?
Oh, jeez.
I mean, it's on the defensive side of the ball. They just don't have the dudes. I mean, they're just not getting it done. This is, you know, a team, Hawaii, that we're going to be playing. I mean, they're not going to put 45 points up on death row. It's not going to be close to that.
Yeah, so, which was it's a tough place to go and play. I get it, but it didn't look pretty at all.
Not good.
And it's an embarrassment for the conference. I mean,
yeah, it's a tough way to start.
It's not good for the Pac-12. That was not good.
Another stain on the pack, I hate to say it, UCLA at Cincinnati. Second in the home-and-home series. The Bearcats won in the Rose Bowl last year. UCLA traveling Cincy favored by 3. They would win and cover 24-14. Lots of injuries to talk about, but UCLA heads back to take on San Diego State, 1:15 on Pac-12 Network. Aztecs love picking off Pac-12 teams, but in 22 meetings, I couldn't believe this. They've never beat UCLA.
I could not believe that. I was shocked. When I saw your notes, I could not believe
that. They took out Stanford, right? UCLA is favored by 7. The over-under is 46. So Vegas sees this one going 27-20 in favor of the Bruins. Law Dog, what do you think, man?
Well, yeah, so I this got me so curious that I looked it up. 0-19 against UCLA, 7-19 against the rest of the South. So not great, but I mean they've picked they've gotten pretty much everybody. They're 0-2 against SC, 0-1 against Colorado. Then against the North, they're actually 6-15. They're 0-4 against Oregon, 0-4 against UW. So yeah, they've been a little thorny as a Mountain West team, but certainly this just feels like, man, it's, they're knocking on the door like they're going to get this one, right? It just feels like they're going to get this one. I am no UCLA fan. I think you guys know this. I'm enjoying this. It's a little bit of schadenfreude for me. apparently, Josh Kelly was banged up, though, a little bit, again, limited against Cincinnati. If he's healthy and carrying the ball 35 times,
right,
makes me feel a little better for the Bruins. So anyway, DTR really did not look very good. I think that you got to be, if you're a Bruin fan, I mean, watching them implode on Twitter is like, personally, I'm enjoying it. It's kind of like a train crash. You just can't look away. But I mean, you know, this is a proud program in the Pac-12. And to just see how bad it has gotten. And Chip Kelly was supposed to be the guy that was going to turn this around. So let's give him time to do that, right? I think Coach Peterson said when he first got here, you know, it takes about 18 months to implement those cultural things and to get going. And so he's still easily within that time. So we'll see. I'm still bullish on them for the long term, but it's certainly weird what they're doing.
I will say this. I am also thoroughly enjoying just watching Chip Kelly's facial expressions during the game. It looks literally like somebody's farting around him the whole time. It's just, he's in pain. Awesome.
It could be that guy holding all the cords.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
totally.
That's great.
It's just awkward. It's just awkward. Yeah. Guys, if Josh Kelly doesn't play, which we got to watch that very closely, and, you know, the Chipster is pretty famous on keeping things under wrap. I think they got the wrong team favorite here, guys. I think they go down.
Wow.
I think they're going to go down to the Aztecs.
It just like that.
It feels like a rudderless ship right now, man. And they look bad.
I normally would say that, but I this year's San Diego State team, 6-0 against Weber State last week.
Six. Hey, they shut them out.
Yeah, I mean, the defense will come, but I mean, this is come on, guys. I normally would agree with you. Boy, if they do, I mean, wow. I mean, dude, this is...
All right, BT, we're in the Pac-12 Survivor Pool. Tell me, how close are you to taking UCLA this week when you're going to need a win from them sometime? You're saying they're going to win this game against San Diego State. Are you going to take them?
Hell no. I went on week two last year. Right. I can't do that again. Not trying to be tricky. I'm going with the sure thing. What did it end last week in week five?
Yeah.
I mean, it ended so early last year, week nine, was it? Okay. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Next one was fun. The 94th Holy War between BYU and then number 14 Utah. The Utes had won 8 in a row coming in. They would pull away in the second half, 30-12 in a rain delay game. The D lucked great, man. A pair of picks. Man, Zach Moss looked really strong. This week, they host Northern Indiana in the second half of their home and home with them. Again, that's one of my scratch your heads why you did a home and home with those guys. This one's at Rice-Eccles Stadium, 10 a.m. Pacific time on Pac-12 Network. The now number 13 Utah Utes favored by 22. The over-under is 43.5. Vegas sees this one something like 33-10 Utah. Mitch, a lot of hype. The hype train has left Rice-Eccles. Did Utah live up to the hype? What do you think, man?
Yeah, they're balanced and they're legit. The thing that I noticed was Zach Moss, really impressive. He just picked up steam as that game progressed against BYU, which was pretty interesting to see. You know, he ends up with 29 carries for 187 yards, a TD, a long of 28. He just looked really, really strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's the one Achilles heel for this team. I'm still not sold on Tyler Huntley.
Yeah.
That is the thing, man. He went, 13 of 16 against BYU for 106 yards, but no TDs, no interceptions, a QBR of 42, guys.
You hope you don't need him.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? What happens, like, if I'm the D coordinator, I just load up the box, right? And say, we're not letting Zach Moss beat us, right? And Huntley, you got to do it, right? And so we'll see that for sure this year. We won't see it this Saturday. I think they roll on Northern Indiana and...
Illinois.
Northern Illinois, and they beat that spread.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, but I think you're right. Like, the national media, who doesn't do a lot of investigating because they can't, they have so many teams to cover, they just go, oh, senior quarterback, that must be good, right? Senior quarterback, here we go, senior quarterback. And we'll see what happens, man.
Yeah.
Well, and Jack Tuttle is supposed to be the guy, and he left. And, I mean,
speaking of that,
Shelley, yeah, another transfer. I mean, just don't, you know, obviously don't get me started, obviously. But, I mean, Shelley, you know, I think I said this in the South preview show, just give it a try. I mean, 13 for 16 for 106 yards, you're not even really seriously trying to throw the ball. Yeah. You're basically just saying, we're gonna throw the ball as a game theory, like just to mix it up. It's not any serious attempt to generate offense.
That is a really interesting point. I've always really respected Willingham, Kyle Whittingham, right? I think he's a great coach. At some point in time, if this continues and they continue to win, it will be fascinating to see how he manages this. Just to say, hey, I'm going to give him a quarter, right? We got to do better.
See what
we got to do better here, because they know they're going to need it, right? They know coming into Husky Stadium, for example, or some
I would rather see Tyler Huntley under center when they come to Washington than Jason Shelley.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But I mean, look, they got that win, the ninth in a row. Nice for them to have the Holy War in week one when you don't have to worry about getting the team up versus that week 13 last year when they were already in the Pac-12 championship and had to pull it out at the end.
That was weird.
Nice win. Always glad to see that and pick up that team. Our buddies down with BYU, the number two team in 1984, BYU Cougars. All right, here we go. Next one. Arizona State, they looked impressive in their home opener, 30-7 against Kent State. True freshman Jaden Daniels passed for a pair of touchdowns and ran for one. Eno Benjamin picked up where he left off with another 100-yard game, just another one clocking him up, and 30 receiving. Brandon Ayuk, man, he appears to be the heir apparent. If you think of the receivers there, he goes for 140 yards and a score. They hold Kent State to 200 yards. This week, they host Sac State on Friday night, 7 p.m. on Pac-12 Network. Not sure how much we're going to learn until week three when they see Michigan State. I could not get a line on this one, so I think this is going to be interesting. Law Dog, what do you think, man? Did the Sun Devil show you enough to think they can challenge in the South, particularly with everything that's happening at USC? Is this the challenger to Utah?
I don't really think so, but I mean, I'm certainly not closing the door on it. Jaden Daniels, I think, you know, he looks pretty good. 15 for 24 for 284. So that's to contrast with Tyler Huntley, right? Here's a guy who's throwing it down the field a little bit. He was helped quite a bit by that 77-yard touchdown to Ayuk. But, I mean, ASU ran the ball 46 times. So, you know, this is the same type of thing. If they, when they're playing Utah, is it going to be like 16-13? I mean, I think they're going to need a serious defense to win games with that kind of a team and that kind of a strategy. So, you know, we will see on that. We're not going to learn anything about their defense, you're right, until next week. So I'm not saying they're going to challenge in the South, but Sacramento State, I mean, whatever.
So they have Michigan State the following week.
Yeah.
Right? So that's going to be
and really good. And they look good.
And that's at
yeah, that's Michigan State, that's right? In Lansing. Yeah.
In Lansing.
Yeah, because remember they got that win last year. So, like, this is going to be interesting to see. Jaden Daniels, I mean, I love seeing the dual threat quarterbacks, but one thing that always scares me is you see the dual threat quarterback who is a true freshman, and that guy's calves look like the bottom of a tennis racket. Yeah. Like, that someone could just sever him in half when he's running down the field. But he looked good, though. I'll say it. All right, so next one, man. Friday night slate, man. Pretty fun. Beavers hosted Oklahoma State. I watched a fair amount of this in Corvallis. They lose, but they'd cover. 52-36 Cowpokes. Next for the Beavers, they travel to host Hawaii, who plays its first three against the Pac-12. It's 9 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. local Hawaii time, only televised. This is wrong. On, like, Facebook? It's the only place that I can see that this is televised. It's not on any channels.
So, yeah, the home team, it's the home team's television contract. So if the Hawaii television contract doesn't get national exposure,
they just put it on Facebook Messenger.
Or
makes
the
sense.
WAC or whatever. they're WAC.
They're
right?
WAC.
Yeah, they're WAC, yeah. Wow. Okay, so look, I mean, this one still, I couldn't believe Hawaii favored by 5. But that's what people think of this Beavers team. Mitch, how about those Beavers, man, in 2019 under Johnny Smith? Can they restore pride to the pack in the state of Hawaii?
Stand by your Beavers, Mitch. Stand by them.
That's right. I don't know if the listeners can hear that, but I'm banging my microphone against my
head. That's a soft spot.
Look, Jamar Jefferson's the truth, dude. If you're going to look at some bright side with the Beavs, quarterback didn't get hurt, right? Hodgkins had some plays there. Their big receiver, but God, their defense is just hot garbage, guys.
So
that's
bad.
The thing. It's like turnstile. I hate to say this, I think Hawaii's going to win.
Oh, give me the rainbows.
Taking the Rainbow Warriors.
We have to clean up the
mess. You know what? I have no problem taking the Beavs against the spread in this one. But, oh, man, it's painful to watch. I mean, you know, this is our North Division, like, you know, competition here. You don't want to see them just look worse than the whack.
The line has moved up 6.5.
Oh, boy.
Over under 78.
Oh, gosh.
78, what? Man.
Which, taking the Beavs and the over. Let's do it.
I like the Beavs and the over. Stay up all night for that one. Okay, so the next one, man, another fun one. The 91st meeting of the Rocky Mountain Showdown, CU versus CSU, Mile High Stadium. They'd pull away. This was that they actually had the best attendance in the conference this week. They pull away in the second half and win big, 52-31. This week's Buffs, man, they have a big one hosting number 24 Nebraska for the 71st meeting of this classic old Big 12 rivalry. Cornhuskers have the lifetime advantage, 39-19-2, but the Buffs had that great win last year in Lincoln. Our buddies from Freeball and were down there live, 33-28. Look, we hear from them that tickets are going, can you believe this, $400 minimum price on StubHub to get a ticket to this game. Yeah, crazy. Nebraska favored by 3.5. Over under is 64.5. So Vegas sees this thing like 34-30 for the Cornhuskers, man. Law Dog, what do you make of this old rivalry, bud?
Well, yeah, I mean, Colorado actually got these guys last year, right? I mean, that was kind of one of the shockers of the whole season. And I was a little surprised, I know I could tell you, at just the level of hate between these programs. Throughout the 80s and 90s, right, this was one of the premier rivalries in the country. Mm-hmm. I remember going to Nebraska for the Washington game a few years ago, and all the fans saying, oh, at least you're not Colorado, you know? So, I mean, that was kind of like, really? But, this is huge. This is hate. This is raw hate. But this is not last year's Nebraska team either. This Nebraska team was picked to win the Big Ten West, and they're actually ranked 25th right now. So, you know, the writers like them better than Wisconsin and Iowa in the West in the Big Ten. I mean, give me the Cornhuskers in this one. I think we probably will see more of the Montez to LaVisca Chenault than we have been seeing. But, you know, there's Colorado just up front, they just don't have the depth, I don't think, to contend with like a Big Ten power like Nebraska would be. I think this is going to be, I think this is the revenge game for the Cornhuskers.
Yeah, you know, I probably agree with that. I think it, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like LaVisca kind of snuck up on folks last year a little bit at the beginning of the season. Yeah. And I'm not looking at stats on what he did against Nebraska last year, but my impression is they're not going to key on him like they will this year, right? To make sure they take that part of the game away. And that's going to be fascinating to watch because he's awesome.
And look, it was against Colorado State last week, but they used other weapons. Mm-hmm. And then like when they finally had to, you know, they used him on a fly sweep once or something like that, and it went for like 15 yards, but they didn't overuse him last week. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't think Nebraska looked particularly good last week either against Southern Alabama, 35-21. Let's go get them, Buffs. Come on, man. Let's get him again. I'd love to see him win those two.
Back to back, BT.
Back to back, guys. Let's get him. Saturday night, number 23 Wazoo beat up on New Mexico State. Remember, this is the old Wazoo team that used to lose their home opener every year, man. 58-7. The start of the Anthony Gordon era. He would go 29 of 35, 420 yards and 5 TDs. Max Borgi, 128 yards rushing. The offense absolutely went off. The D forced a bunch of turnovers. This week, the now number 22 Wazoo Cougars taking on Northern Colorado, 2 p.m. on Pac-12 Network. No line on the game. Mitch, come on, man. What do you think? Are the Cougs for real? Have we underestimated them again?
Finally, a game where I can pick a Pac-12 team to win.
That's right. Let's go back.
Ouch.
They are going to crush Northern Colorado. They look pretty darn good. You know, we'll see what happens when they play a more balanced team. A team with a real defense, I guess. You know, I'm not gonna go too far out on a ledge and say, man, they're totally legit, but they're looking pretty solid. Anthony Gordon knows that offense, can move it. You know, we've seen what's happened in years past with the Cougs too.
Our boy Gabrud actually got in there and went 9 for 11 for 76 yards and a touchdown of his own. So between the two of them, they threw for 500 yards. Northern Colorado is not a real competition, so Cougs are going to win that. The question is really, it's the same thing. I have the question the same for most of the teams around the conference. Are they playing any defense? And with Wazoo, I don't think we're going to learn anything about them until we get further into the season to know what they're doing on defense. So, you know, until then, it's all just academic.
There you go. Way to go, Cougs. Nice work. 25 Stanford. Number 25 Stanford beats Northwestern. Here's a good one for the conference, right?
Yes.
17-7. Sneaky backdoor cover. Very sneaky backdoor cover on this. Cardinal D forces four turnovers and breaks Northwestern's seven-game win streak. I didn't realize that. Not counting the championship last year. KJ Costello knocked out of the braced Northwestern's seven-game road win streak. KJ Costello knocked out of the game with a shot while he was sliding.
Very controversial call, right?
Super controversial.
Yeah.
Because you know, people look at you like, oh, not helmet to helmet, but he did get an arm in there that jacked it pretty hard, man. The running game looked good, 132 yards, man. USC withstands. So on the other side of this, another game these guys are going to face this week, USC. USC withstands Fresno State. Big news. JT Daniels goes down early with a knee injury. He's out for the year. Keaton Slovis comes in. Again, Jack Sears, instead of sticking around, decides to transfer.
Transfer portal.
Transfer portal after going up. We need like a bell or something for that. After going up 31-16, Fresno would battle back with 2 minutes remaining. This was a fun game. Driving down to send it to overtime, but they threw a pick into the end zone. This week now, it's USC hosting number 23 Stanford. 7:30 p.m. USC with the 60-33 lifetime advantage. Stanford,
ET.
Yeah.
One correction.
Yeah.
It was a fun game. Unless you're Lin Swan.
Lin Swan sweat through like four undershirts.
I mean, he's going to get fired.
Oh,
too.
Dude, he should probably be first to go.
I think when you're USC right now, he's got to be the first.
Oh, like everyone was like, how many games does USC need to win to save Clay Helton's job? Or the starting quarterback goes out, and then they could just point to that the whole season. Like, that's probably the only thing that might save his job. Stanford got him last year. Remember the 17-3 on the farm? This year, USC favored by 3.5. Law dog, come on, talk to me, buddy.
Wow.
Yeah, so maybe you were squinting before the season and you thought to yourself, man, that USC-Stanford game in week two, that's going to be awesome, right? Yeah, then Stanford, goes out and scores 17 points. USC has now lost their top two quarterbacks, one to an injury, one transfer.
Transfer
so
portal.
I'm calling for this to win. This is going to be a pillow fight, you guys. I don't know what the under is, but just I want it all.
One update before you give the score. I just looked. The line is down to one.
Down to one. I kind of like Stanford in the game, so I would take any points I get as a bonus. But I think give me the under in this one. I just USC's defense, I don't think we talk about it. It's pretty darn good, and they recruit really well.
Yeah,
and Clay Helton, for whatever he is, he's not a defensive guy. Clancy Pendergast, their D coordinator, longtime D coordinator now. He is a defensive guy, and I think, you know, they've recruited that position, especially their new D lineman was that freshman, total stud at end. They've got some secondary guys who are really interesting. So I think with all the turmoil, though, that's going on, like we're talking about, all the jobs swirling, Stanford, the well-coached, no-drama team coming into town, this is not what they need right now. I'm thinking Stanford 10-9.
Ooh, wow, 10-9. So you like that 45 is the over-under. So you like it way under.
Give me an under.
Wow.
I like that under, too. I think it's going to be sloppy. I think it's going to be messy. The question is whose defense is going to play better.
And
I like
USC's
that call.
USC's starting a brand-new quarterback who wasn't even involved in their quarterback competition a couple weeks ago. Now he's the starter. We saw what happened last year when they lost their quarterback against ASU, and it just looked awful out there. I could see the same thing happening.
Let's put it this way. Who do you trust more when there's a bunch of adversity and kind of like this, all this grayness? David Shaw and his program and the way he runs it, or Clay Helton in the mess that they're
in
now?
That's what I'm talking about. Right? Shaw's just going to come in their business trip and get it done.
Yep, if there's one team in the conference, they recruit incredibly well, who when the going gets tough, they start getting the quitting. USC. Every year, as soon as the championship is outside of their hand, they face some adversity, they start quitting. All right, guys, the last one, and boy, this was the big one. The only meeting of ranked teams in the country in week one. I can't remember the last time that was the case. Number 11, Oregon against number 16, Auburn, a rematch of that Cam Newton National Championship. Auburn favored by 3. They would win, and they would cover 27-21. Auburn started a true freshman for the first time in history in Bo Nix. The Ducks, man, they led 21-6 late in the third quarter, but they would not score again. The preseason self-awarded Natty winners struggle out of the gate. Herbert played okay. Stat line looked all right. 28-37, 242 yards, but all up, man. Count it up, buddy. Herbert, 5-10 away from Autzen. 5 wins, 10 losses away from Autzen. This week, the now number 16 Ducks, so they switch spots with Auburn. Down 5 spots, they face Nevada. Nevada, who took out Purdue at home last week. Game time's 4:30 on Saturday. Pac-12 Network. Oregon favored by 23. The over under 62. Vegas sees this thing like 43-19 in favor of the Ducks. Mitch, what do you say, man? Panicking, Eugene? What are you thinking?
I mean, you're nervous in Eugene right now, quite frankly. Where are the receivers? Like, everybody's hurt. Nobody's playing up. The transfer from Penn State didn't play. Pretty messy. And you look at that offense and that vaunted Oregon offense with Herbert, and it's CJ Verdell right now, honestly. Because who's Herbert going to throw to, right? They had a smaller kind of slot receiver, kind of reminding me of like a Chico
Johnny Johnson, yeah.
Yeah, and they were looking at him a lot. But, I mean, it was a very... I mean, there were two players pretty much that Auburn was keying on, and that was their offense, right? Gosh, you just gotta look at that coaching staff a little bit, and yeah, they sure can recruit, but I felt like they got out coached in the fourth quarter for sure.
Oh,
like
the play of the game, they came out and took a timeout.
They of
had
the season.
9 months to get the first play called, and they couldn't line it up. They took a timeout. Then they burned two other timeouts
in the fourth quarter.
They don't know that Herbert has to come out for a play.
Right.
I was sitting there saying, Herbert's got to come out for a play. I mean, Cristobal has a lot to prove. The press is skewering him, rightfully so. I was watching this game and just laughing. I mean, I was laughing. Like, you know, my heart was with Auburn. My head was with Oregon. I knew.
Right.
I know that
the conference
has got to shake off this reputation of just being completely downtrodden. But, I mean, when you go out and play like that and blow a lead like that at a neutral site game with a senior quarterback who's supposed to be a top 10 pick in the NFL draft.
He's supposed to be potentially the number one pick.
And then you lose to a true freshman who just up and chucks it.
Outplayed him. He looked like he outplayed him. It was not good for the conference, guys. Let's just put it that way. I agree. I mean, I was sitting there watching that game, and I was smiling. I knew I shouldn't have been smiling. I knew it was wrong, but I couldn't stop myself.
It feels so right, though. Yeah.
I think it's, like in general, it's not good for the conference, but I will say the other side of this. It's really not good for Oregon. At the end of the day, at the end of this season, an undefeated Pac-12 team gets into the playoff. A one-loss Pac-12 champion
is probably biting their nails.
Probably, just because of chaos everywhere else. A two-loss doesn't get in.
Yeah,
whereas an SEC, like a two-loss team, probably gets in, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if that equation really changes that much for teams besides Oregon out of this, but it's overall not good.
But you know, that's been happening for years. Look at the 1990 national champions, right? Colorado, I think, was 10-1-1. And they were like kind of a fluky, split the title with Georgia Tech, who had a tie. But Georgia Tech was like the Southern East Coast team that got the respect. I just think, you know, you cannot single-handedly and change this reputation in a day. Rome wasn't built in a day. The Huskies can't do anything to change it. You just have to win the games on the field. That's what it comes down to. You just have to start winning the games on the field. So what's crucial about this is that we want to be able to play those games. But we had a chance last year in the Rose Bowl to do our part, and we didn't do it either. So
we didn't do it against Auburn.
Yeah, and we didn't do it against Auburn. So, I mean, you just have to keep recruiting, keep your nose down, and just grind it out and win these games on the field. That's how we're going to change this thing. Don't sit there on your TV, on your couch on Saturday night, and cheer for Oregon while you're sipping on your Bodhi Zafa. Just let them go to hell. That's what they deserve, all right?
Well, What's the correlation of this? 100%.
The last thing I'll mention is just Oregon looked like they were folding in the fourth quarter. You could just feel right? Yeah. Like, they just didn't look
sphincters
up for
getting
it.
A little tighter.
Yep, they just looked up for it, and Herbert did his part, but he wasn't good enough. He kind of, like... Minshew last year had that thing, like, "Hey, we're going for this.
Taking this.
We're gonna take that. We're gonna do this." And I was waiting for that kind of a feeling from Herbert, and I never got it.
No,
which is the other thing that you got to be worried
in
about
a close
if you're
game.
A Duck fan,
they
right?
cut to him on the sideline, and he's got his butthole clenched, watching Auburn drive down the field. And it's like, the ball's not in your hands, buddy. Like, you were supposed to be the guy to win this game, and you're just sitting on the sidelines because you couldn't get a first down.
Just not even that. It was just like the body language, and instead of like being in the other guys' faces,
he
was kind of off to the side, just kind of standing there. And I was like, oh God, that's almost like Josh Rosen-esque a little bit, right? And so they've got this aura now around them. Let's switch back to this upcoming matchup. I expect them to beat Nevada, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll bounce back.
They'll bounce back. but they might not look good doing it, guys.
Yeah.
And so that
yeah.
is going to be a really interesting narrative unfolding down
the road. Well, they open the conference play, so they got Montana the week after, and then they open at Stanford. I mean, tell me who's favored in that and by what.
That's how they look. That's how they
find out. Yeah, next couple of weeks. Fascinating. This is why we play the games.
That's why
it's
they
so
do.
Cool.
End of the day, I'll tell you what. I'm glad that the team I cheer for doesn't have a coach who's calling three horrible timeouts after the game is talking that his line is sometimes the better team doesn't win. So glad that's not my coach. Yeah.
I've gone on too many rants, so I can't do a third one on him. But I mean, Jesus, when I saw that, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, it's nuts. But I will say, man, boy, I'm so glad Husky football is back. The skinny era has begun. Had a blast last Saturday. I think we get revenge on Cal. We're going to be back here next week to talk about it. Anything else, guys?
Ooh, I'm giddy.
All right, go Dogs.
Woof.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.